The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Joining We the People Radio, we are at KCNR 1460, Shasta Redding. We are the home of Free Fire Media. Carl and Linda Bott, the owners, are gracious about letting us
commandeer the airwaves.
A little over the edge at times on Sunday mornings. Hey, there's no better time to be over the edge than on a Sunday morning.
Exactly.
And you are joining your host, Elizabeth Woodward, Aaron Ryan, and Bob Martin.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
You have your science movie voice on this morning.
Do I?
Yes. I like it.
Thank you very much.
I can never keep the science movie voice because I start laughing.
Hey, so if you want to jump on...
We're doing all love songs for bumper music today.
We are.
Here at Light Rock, KCNR.
Yeah, there you go. It's so cool because we, Aaron and I, get to relive the 70s with Bob. We love it. It's totally awesome. So we're going to have a couple of great guests today. Don't go anywhere except to fill up your coffee cup. And if you want to jump on board
and
give us a
call,
the number is 530-605-4567. And I really encourage you to jump on our chat room at wethepeopleradio.us, and you will also find our webpage there, everything about our guests today, which is kind of cool because you can follow along while you're listening. And there are links and all kinds of things on that webpage. So during the breaks, you can bone up a little bit on our speakers and follow along. And we've got links to every show that we've ever done. And we're fast approaching our second year, so there's plenty of information there.
Hot news tip.
We're fast approaching our third year.
Oh, yes. Completing our second, starting our third.
Oh, yeah. I was with you.
Yeah.
Hey, so guess who's going to be here on the anniversary edition?
Who?
Okay, who was here last year on the anniversary edition?
I can't remember.
Cameron Gamble.
Oh, Cameron Gamble.
Yes.
God, so he's still alive and well out there?
Yeah, he called and I said, hey, you got to come on the radio with us. Are you back in town? And, you know, blah, blah, blah,
Is he still doing Project Taken?
Yeah.
Where's he been?
He was on a Project Taken thing.
Wow.
I thought
he dropped off the face of the earth.
He did. They had to, like, disappear.
No kidding.
Yeah, I know. It was exciting.
Oh, good.
So now they're back.
He was, like, undercover?
Yeah.
Wow.
Look, with his whole family, how do you take four little kids and disappear?
Oh, wow.
That takes a little practice.
Wow. That is awesome.
And you know what? If he could teach me how to do that, I could show it to some people in restaurants.
So that's something to look forward to. Go to projecttaken.com and be ready for our anniversary show on...
It's like the 7th or the something like that. Yeah, because I said, let me look at my calendar. Let's do it right now so we get it planned. And, you know, I flip the pages and I go, how about like the 7th? He goes, isn't that the anniversary show? I'm like,
God,
I don't know.
Cameron, you're on it.
He goes, yeah, I was on the anniversary show last
Man.
Year.
He is on the ball.
I'm glad he's paying attention.
Very cool.
So that'll be pretty fun, and I forget what we're doing between now and then. We have like a whole month to do.
I have no idea, but...
We'll tell people about that later when I have my calendar in my hand.
Yeah, so anything new out there, folks, while we get our speaker on the line?
What's happening at the Tea Party meeting tomorrow night?
Well, we're starting a series of debates. We start with our congressional debate tomorrow evening and kind of going from there. I am not the debate guru, however, so I couldn't tell you. I think the supervisors are on the 17th in Shasta County.
My calendar's in the car.
Nah, we can.
I could reach out the door. No, I've got to reach a lot further than the door.
Yeah, you can go to readingteaparty.com if you want to find out the series of debates taking place in our neck of the woods. And I'm sure that no matter where you live, there are debates going on. I encourage you to attend or listen or find out about them because, you know, there's a lot of folks out there working on a grassroots level and working pretty darn hard to bring a lot of information to the general population and to take advantage.
Like prison.
I know. Well,
it's like prison
sometimes
talk.
Sometimes
it's a little like prison, isn't it?
Sometimes it is.
Okay, I know. I don't have my calendar, but I have my X-ray vision. Okay. I had a moment. All right, so on the 10th, tomorrow's the congressional one. Then I'm looking at my calendar on my computer. Then on the 17th, we have we have District 4 supervisors.
Right.
And then on the 24th, we have the assembly race.
Okay.
And I know that the Record Searchlight actually is doing, you know, some promotion on that as well,
yeah,
to let
are.
People know, because there aren't a lot of debates being held.
And I do have to say, since we started this whole ball game back in 09 or whenever it was, that literally the tea parties are the place to be when it comes to really, really learning about stuff, especially nonpartisan. And we always have the biggest crowds and the most organized debates, and we always have a little twist. You know, they're not predictable, so it's a good time to come out and find out about what folks are really about.
Yeah, Dan, the debate master, he's he's brewing up something with his debate folks.
Yep, he's a good guy.
Hey, so why don't you tell, since I didn't book J.R.R. Martin, why don't you tell people about him, because you actually have the book.
I will, and I'm going to go to wethepeopleradio.us on my computer, on my laptop.
Do you want to use mine? Do you want to check?
That's quite all right. I'm almost there, and we will give you a little bio on J.R. Martin. Do we have him on the line?
We do.
Okay.
I checked. He's no relation to me.
Now, I forgot... Bob as in Martin. Hey, I'm going to give a little bio on J.R. Martin. You'll have to excuse me because I forgot my glasses. You know, it's hard to get out of the house on a Sunday morning with everything
just
that
got
you
mine.
Need.
Now I'm blind.
I love these interchangeable glasses.
I just tried. That's worse. Okay.
Oh.
J.R. Martin is the author of Selling Us Out, and Selling Us Out is U.S. Selling the United States Out. It's not about a grand conspiracy. It's about how the toxic combination of ignorance, negligence, political ideology, corruption, and greed drove bad trade and economic policies that culminated in the economics collapse of 2008. And I'm going to just jump right on the phone with Mr. J.R. Martin, who was gracious enough to join us this morning.
Before we do that, we have Pat from the Tea Party calling in. I wanted to sneak her in here because she had something to mention about voter registration. Pat?
Hit it, yes. Pat.
Yes.
Good morning.
You're on the phone.
Hi. Hello. Thank you. I just want to remind all the listeners that it's so important to register to vote. And something we haven't known before is that voting by mail is subject to voter fraud. And it doesn't really guarantee privacy, and it's no guarantee that your vote would be unaltered or untouched. So vote by mail is not the best thing. Sometimes we have to use it, but it is subject to fraud. And so a lot of people don't know that, and I'm just calling to encourage people to change their voter registration to voting in person.
Yeah, because absentee ballots, once you let that absentee ballot leave the safety of your hand, you don't really know what happens to it.
Yeah, and there's another disadvantage is that it requires early voting, and that's sometimes before all the information is in, and you don't have all the information on which to make an informed decision.
Absolutely.
So I thank you for letting me remind the voters about that, and also to encourage people to do a voter registration drive in their church. It's perfectly legal, an easy way to do it for people, and you know, there are people in the Tea Party who are willing to help with that. So thank you for taking my call.
Sure,
today.
No problem. Thanks, Pat.
Bye-bye.
Cool, Pat, thanks.
All right.
Yeah, because this is the time. You better get your registration squared away. And if you're an absentee voter and you want to leave it that way, you can drop your ballot off at the poll if you're in town.
Yeah, but so don't believe that absentee is the way to go because you have very little control over it.
Yeah.
And that leaves it open for fraud. Okay, so we're going to jump on the phone with J.R. Martin. Good morning. Are you in there?
I am. Thank you. Thanks for having me, too.
Oh, thanks so much for holding on. So I have to ask you something. You hail from Wisconsin.
Yes.
Tell us how Wisconsin is doing these days.
Well, I mean, it's doing fine. You know, we had a lot of excitement here a short while ago. But
you did. You made national news day after day.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's unfortunate, though. You know, actually, what I hated to see as a citizen of this state now, and I've lived lots of other places, but my wife actually was born and raised over near the Milwaukee area, and that's why we're up here. But it really concerned me to see American citizens at each other as aggressively as they were. And it really, this is deeply disturbing to me now to see what's going on around the country. You know, Wisconsin's a small example of what's going on everywhere, where Americans are coming at each other so aggressively, and not really, and they're just, I believe, and this is why I wrote this book and spent 3 years researching and writing it. People are, they're having discussions without having all the facts. And what that does is it causes a lot of emotional discussion,
and
it causes a lot of polarization. And we're not coming together rationally and having a rational, facts-based discussion on where we're at, how did we get here, and how do we move forward. And that's really what selling us out is all about.
Well, in your book, if you read the reviews on it, the thing that they highlight most specifically is that it's very factual based. You've kind of left a lot of the emotion out of the book, and it's really great the way it's laid out, because you do have a lot of detail, but it's very user friendly and it is very factual. And what brought you to the point where you wrote the book?
Well, I had a situation, you know, like most people, I was going about my life and not really paying, or actually assuming that people that were doing business internationally, both U.S. and foreign corporations, were pretty much playing by the same rules. I did consulting work a few years ago for a company based in Singapore with factories in China, and some things happened there that I detail in the book that really opened my eyes up to that's not true. And then the other thing that caused me to do is really start to dig in deeper and understand what was going on more with international trade and what was happening there. And then that brought me to the realization that probably most people don't pay attention to is how big our trade deficits are, and they're never talked about. And that's a huge problem. It's as big, the trade deficits are as big a problem and maybe even bigger problem than our national debt. And actually one is feeding the other. And honestly, it's something I never paid attention to until I had this experience with this company. And then as a result of that, I started really looking into international trade issues. Even though I'd been in international business for years, there's a lot of things I didn't realize about, you know, that was happening there. And so that was the beginning of me doing the research and writing the book.
And that's a topic, I guess, most of us don't know anything about, you know, international trade.
Right.
You know, not very... You know, not a lot of us work in that.
And we hear a lot about it in national news, but there's not a lot of information to back that up. And I agree. I don't think people really understand how tariffs and trade relationships and so forth really impact our own economy.
How about this? If we take a really quick break, we'll be right back with J.R. Martin, and we're going to learn more about that. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. We are with J.R. Martin. He is the author of Selling Us Out, Us Being the United States of America. So, J.R., in your book you talk about the economic collapse, catastrophic results that are facing us, and you say that we have not ever addressed the real underlying issues. What are those issues?
Well, they're the one issue that people look at but we haven't done anything about, of course, is the national debt, which we've been talking about for quite a few years now, but we've done really little to address. But the other very important issue that's directly linked to that nobody's discussing, and I'll explain in a minute why that is, neither the Democrats nor the Republicans are discussing, is the trade deficit. And just to put this in perspective, why that's so important, because that directly, the trade deficit represents the exportation of commerce and actually whole industries, factories, and jobs leaving our shores. The U.S., of 224 nations in the world, the U.S. has the largest trade deficit of about $600 billion. And we're last amongst all the nations in the world. To put that in perspective, China is number one with the highest trade surplus of over $370 billion. Most of that trade surplus is a result of them exporting into the U.S. and goods being sold here. And so what happens with the trade deficits is that's a direct representation of commerce and jobs leaving our shores. And that's what nobody's talking about. And the reason it's not being talked about is because there's a lot of people making some serious money by exploiting the labor differential in these low-cost countries, primarily China. And the Chinese know that, and what the Chinese are doing is they're using this to attract these companies to their country, and they're basically they're gutting out the U.S. economy. They're putting us in a very weak position economically, and we're letting them do it. And this has some very serious implications to our national security. And this is something, again, that nobody's talking about. And it's I'm glad you had me on the show this morning, because I'm hoping that the members of the Tea Party, I know you've done a great job of raising people's awareness of fiscal responsibility and a national debt, but hopefully we can also take a look at your members that can read my book and understand the seriousness of this trade deficit, and we can bring that to the forefront and get hopefully at least the Republicans and maybe even the Democrats talking about it, because this should be part of the national debate. What are we going to do about this record trade deficit? This is basically, we're bankrupting our economy. That's really what it comes down to. This trade deficit is a huge, huge issue. And the reason, again, it's not being talked about is because some folks are becoming very wealthy selling out our country in order to line their own pockets and their own bank accounts.
So would you consider this to be a partisan issue, or is this a crony capitalism issue?
Well, this is an American issue.
Okay.
I mean, I don't, regardless of where you're at on the political spectrum, if we don't address this, we're all going to suffer for it, regardless of what your political views are. So, and that's really it's an extremely serious issue. And yeah, I guess crony capitalism would be it. And actually, I talk about this in my book. You know, it's interesting how, and I didn't understand this until I did the research, but capitalism has really gone through a transformation in this country in the last three decades or four decades. We developed up until the 1970s, 80s, we had a very good capitalistic system in our country that was had checks and balances. And really the capitalism that existed up until that period, it was really targeted at supporting and building the U.S. economy. What happened was when we started to change that in the 80s, and we shifted from what I call in my book American capitalism to a global capitalism model. The problem with global capitalism is, and actually we worked under the global capitalism model before the Great Depression, and that's one of the things that brought us to that point, and I explain that in my book. But the problem with global capitalism is, without checks and balances that we put in place in the American system, is it has no allegiance to any country. It doesn't care about anything except for simply return on investment, and it's a system that exploits resources and labors anywhere. And again, there's no allegiance. So that system doesn't care whether what it's doing destroys America, and that's exactly what we see going on and have seen for quite some time.
What was your what was your first clue that something was kind of haywire?
Well, this company that I was doing business with or consulting with, they were operating in the U.S. tax-free. They were doing about $40 million in business. They weren't paying one penny in taxes, and they were unincorporated. And I didn't realize this until after I engaged them on a consulting basis. And I was like, how does this work? You know, because my wife and I own a small business, and we're definitely paying taxes. And we had to be incorporated in order to operate. And I'm like, how does this work? So I went to a tax attorney and I talked to him about it, and he said, yeah, that could be a problem. And he said, but you know, it's kind of in the gray area of the law. And he was not going through all the details, which I do explain in my book. He basically told me that what these people may do may or may not be illegal. And then he showed me a tax treaty that was initiated by George Shultz in 1986 during the Reagan administration, and he explained to me how this company was exploiting loopholes in that treaty. And then and I said, well, how can this happen? I said, if these guys have figured this out, who else has figured this out? I mean, these aren't the smartest people on the planet. And I said, so what this tells me is this was my first glimpse into, boy, I think we could potentially have a huge problem here. And this could be just basically bankrupting our treasury as well as, you know, the bad thing about what they were doing, other than not paying taxes, is that gives them a significant competitive advantage coming into and competing with U.S. Yeah. companies who were in the same business. And so not only, the U.S. companies, how are they going to compete with that? Even if the U.S. companies go offshore and try to get the same labor cost that these guys were taking advantage of in China, if the U.S. companies are paying taxes and these guys aren't, that's a big difference in operating costs. And so and also if the U.S. companies have to be incorporated here to operate and so forth, and there's other things that go along with that that cost them additional costs, and these guys aren't, then that's serious. So I said, well, how many other companies are operating like this? And actually, I don't know what the exact number is, but the research that I did, and you can read the details in my book, Selling Us Out, there's quite a few. And this is doing tremendous damage to the U.S. economy, tremendous damage, and nobody's talking about it.
And why would a company, I get the obvious benefit of not incorporating and doing so much offshore, but what's the difference between those companies and like the companies we traditionally think of? How do they start that way, or do they just kind of morph that way as they get big?
Well, what they're doing, and actually what I realized after I did the research in my book, there's companies actually here that are kind of doing the same thing in a different way. They're gaming the system. And so we've kind of lost control of our corporate laws we've lost control of our economic sovereignty is what I describe in the book, because we're not properly managing what the activity is of both foreign and domestic companies as it relates to how they do business in this market. And actually, if you go, there is no place else in the world where you have this situation. And, and to tie that back into the trade policy, and actually I gave a presentation on this yesterday, and people were stunned because most people don't realize what's going on here. And that's obviously why I researched and wrote the book. But let's talk about tariffs for a minute. So when you bring up the word tariffs, a lot of people right away, they go, oh, protectionism. This person wants to raise tariffs. That's protectionism. Well, I talk about in the book what's called reciprocal trade versus free trade. And really, it's common sense. Anybody in business understands that when you set up a business relationship, you want to have terms that are mutually beneficial between you and the other party that you're doing business with. That's just common sense. However, that's not how our trade relationships are structured. This term that we use, free trade, it's really outsourcing. These agreements, and I've studied this, this is a fact. This isn't an opinion, and the facts are in my book. But these trade agreements that we've entered into, that are NAFTA being a good example, these agreements really, their purpose is not trade at all. Their purpose is to set up conditions where domestic and foreign companies can produce somewhere else and sell into the U.S. market without paying any tariffs. That's their purpose. And the reason those agreements exist is because those that own those factories, that are putting those factories in these countries such as Mexico and China and other places, they want the benefit. And so they're paying the politicians in order to provide that benefit to them. Now, what's interesting is, and the data shows this, if you look at the data objectively, it doesn't matter where you're at in the political spectrum, if you look at the data and you see what's happened since the last 100 years on tariffs, it clearly illustrates what's going on. In 1910, before we implemented the income tax, the tariff rate in this country was 40% average. Then what we did is we implemented the income tax in 1913, and the idea was, it was a good idea actually, to take the income tax was to give us the ability to lower the tariff so that we could have easier trade relationships with other countries, because for the first 100 or so years of our country, this was a real cause of friction both inside the United States and outside, is our high tariffs. But actually, that helped build the U.S. economy. That's a whole different discussion that I have in my book. But we said, okay, we're going to bring the tariff rate down, and we brought them down to about an average of 25%. But at that time, the tariffs were the majority of the money used to finance our federal government. So we decided, okay, how are we going to replace that revenue so we can continue to have enough revenue to keep our books in balance at the federal level? So that's when we implemented the income tax, the corporate and the personal income tax in 1913 to do that. Now, you go fast forward to 1940, the average tariff rate was still about 12%. So we ratcheted it down over the years, and it was still 12% was the average tariff rate. Now let's go to today. Today, 70% of the products that come into the United States come in tariff-free. There's no tariff applied at all. And the products that do have a tariff applied to them, the average tariff rate is 1.3%. Now, let me give you, in my book, I talk about India and China and others, and also, you know, I talk about a few other countries, but let's talk about India for a second. In India, and I talk about Japan too, but in India, the tariff rate, I'll just use agriculture as an example because that's what I can remember. In India, the agricultural tariff rate is anywhere from 150% to 300%. And if you go, there's a report in my book, and I don't want to put people to sleep with all these statistics, but if you go into my book, there's a report from the U.S. Trade Representative's office that's recent that talks about the trade barriers that just India has. And similar trade barriers are used in China and even in Japan still. You know, for years we've been arguing with the Japanese about their trade barriers, but they've never changed them. It's been an endless discussion, and actually in my book I use the analogy of the movie Groundhog Day. We keep having the same conversation with these guys over and over, and they entertain our conversations, but they don't change their behavior. And so what we need to do, though, as I argue in the book, is we can't control what other countries do, and we shouldn't even try.
JR,
what we need to do is take control of our country again and not just let a free-for-all exist in the United States.
And we're going to take a quick break,
we'll
and we're going to get right back on that.
We'll be right back with you in 2 minutes.
Thank you.
You're here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
Just give it away. There ain't nothing in this house worth fighting over. Oh, and we're both tired of fighting anyway. Just give it away.
We're back with J.R. Martin, author of Selling Us Out.
And his, new theme song.
Yeah.
That was a good one. I love that song. You know, I
Isn't
love country
great?
Music. I lived in Texas for a number of years. I grew up in the Northeast, but I love country music.
That was a good one.
That was a great song.
Yeah, and Bob. Bob is like a walk-in encyclopedia. I mean, he pulls stuff out of God knows where.
We could say almost anything, and he's like, I got a song for that.
Yeah, he does. He knows them all.
Just give it away.
Hey, JR.
JR, I thought I detected some country music in the background while you were speaking earlier,
yeah.
Did I?
No, there isn't. This is I wish there was, but there isn't.
Hey, so JR, there's a whole promotion of anti-capitalism on the side of the left right now. They've kind of made that their campaign stance, if you will. Who's behind all of this? I mean, who's behind it and who's getting rich?
Well, you know, and I think I'm not anti-capitalist. I'm not anti-capitalist at all. I'm a Theodore Roosevelt capitalist, though. So, and in my book, that if you want to know what that is, you know, I encourage you to read about that in the book. I quote Theodore Roosevelt quite a bit through my book. And Theodore Roosevelt, of course, was a great American, and I think one of our greatest presidents. And he put his country above his party. And so I think capitalism is not a bad thing, and I talk about this in my book. Capitalism is a good system. It's a very powerful tool to build economies. But the we Americans from the beginning, we did struggle with this capitalism because we were worried about it, and we had big debates early on in our history about central bank, not central bank, and basically how to manage our money and how to manage our financial life here, and making sure that we wanted to make sure that the capitalist system was always subservient to our political system, and that we used capitalism to build our country and not destroy it. And so and we struggled with this. If you go back and look at history, which I honestly didn't realize until I did the research in this book, before the Great Depression, we had four depressions prior to that, and we had bank runs were a common thing in this country before the Great Depression because people didn't trust the financial systems. And so what we did, which was a good thing, after the Great Depression, we brought the brightest and best minds into the room, and we came up with systems to get our financial system stable, but also make sure there were good checks and balances in place to make sure that people had confidence in the system and that the system served the greater good of society. But it also provided the free market and free, capitalist advantage so that businesses could grow and prosper. And we did. It was a great system. It was very stable. It was stable up until 1980s, which, again, I kind of reminded myself as I was going through this, most people have forgotten about the savings and loan crisis. That was the biggest expense that the government had to that point since the Great Depression on bailing out financial institutions. It was a huge expense at that time. At that time, we had about a $2 trillion national debt, which was big, especially for that time. But then that savings and loan bailout, if I remember right from my book, was about $125 billion just spent on the savings and loan bailout.
Mm-hmm.
And that savings and loan bailout was a result of really reckless deregulation. Now, I'm a firm believer that we need to have smart and effective regulation, and we need to have as little of it as possible. But we do need to have regulation. Regulation needs to exist in order to protect us from ourselves. because human nature is what it is, and yeah. It's been proven over and over.
That's certainly true.
So, but we need smart and effective regulation. We need to make sure we have good regulations that don't impede us from doing things that benefit all of us. I think this whole thing, I don't think we should demonize capitalism. I don't think we should demonize corporations, but I think we definitely need to be smart in how we manage those and I think we need to demand, again, that capitalism and corporations show allegiance to this country. I'm a 9-year Navy veteran. My son served in the Marine Corps. We got young kids dying in Afghanistan and Iraq. And they come back here and they can't find a job?
Mm-hmm.
That's pathetic.
Yeah, that is a huge...
Travesty of all.
Well, we had a guest on at one point from Israel. He was a security expert, really, from Israel, who came over here and did some training. And he said, your returning veterans should never be at a loss for work. He said, mm-hmm. Those should be the people...
First in line.
...that are running your airports and all that. He said, all these knuckleheads at TSA, mm-hmm. He said, they don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
You bring back your combat veterans and you put them there and you'll have a safe country.
I talk about this in my book. To me, it's a sin that we've got corporations. And my wife just gave me an article the other day that she'd come across where companies are still moving at a rapid rate where their majority of their assets, the majority of their sales, the majority of their infrastructure is in the United States, yet they're incorporating in other countries. To me, the government, this is where the government needs to say, no, enough of that. If you want to incorporate in Switzerland and you want to have a P.O. box somewhere else or whatever, I'm not going to say you can't do that. You go ahead and do it. But you know what? Your tax rate just doubled in the United States. So until you move your resources and your people out of here, if you're going to exploit our economy and our country, but you don't want to be participating here, you just want to game the system, then what I argue in my book, we reinstitute our tariff policy, which I think we need to raise tariffs to some sensible level, and at least this is where reciprocity comes in. We need to make sure that our tariffs are reciprocal with the people that we're trading with, and not just have an open market when other people's markets are closed. And all we do is sit there and talk to them for 50 years about opening their markets, and they ignore us. That's just ridiculous.
So we're talking to J.R. Martin, author of Selling Us Out. And before we go to our next break, because we'll have to soon.
We got kind of bunched up there, sorry.
We're coming to the top of the hour. You mentioned India and China. What's Russia up to?
Well, really, I didn't focus too much on them in my book, but this is a concern politically, obviously, we're all seeing in the news, where Russia seems to be moving more and more towards the behavior of the former Soviet Union. And so this should be a big concern for the United States. And actually, too, they're doing kind of similar things that the Chinese are doing as far as exploiting the U.S. markets. But again, they're not. I don't think Russia's doing near the damage that these other countries. And that's why I focused on those countries in my book. I focused on China, India, and Japan because I think they're the biggest offenders. And actually, the trade deficit numbers show that. That's where we've got our biggest trade deficits, both in goods and services, with those countries, and they're doing the most damage to our economy right now.
Okay. Cool. Great segue into a break.
We're going to take a really swift break. Thank our advertisers. We'll be right back with you in 2 minutes. We're talking to J.R. Martin, the author of Selling U.S. Out. Or maybe it's just us. Here in KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
I want to be rich. Why not? Hey, we're talking to J.R. Martin, author of Selling Us Out, Selling the U.S. Out. We're talking about trade tariffs, trade deficits, U.S. deficits.
All the stuff we don't really know anything about.
And because we're going to come at the top of the hour at 9 o'clock and then we get cut off by national news, J.R., we're going to thank you in advance for being on the show. We've got about 10 minutes left, but that way if you get cut off, you know that we appreciated you being here.
Okay, well,
so we're going to say it ahead of time.
Okay, well, I appreciate you having me on, and I apologize if I got too long-winded in some of my...
Never. No, that's why you're here.
No, we just stink at taking the breaks on time. Okay, that's my job, and I kind of stink at it.
I want to really encourage people to, you can go to Amazon to buy Selling Us Out, or you can go to, and give us your website information and any contact information, JR.
Yeah, the book is actually available at Barnes & Noble, all the Barnes & Noble bookstores. It's available at the local bookstores. It's also available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and anywhere books are sold on the web. My website is sellingusout.org. And I encourage you to go there, too. There's a lot of things happening there. And also follow me on Twitter and Facebook, and you can do that through my website.
Great. Okay, so where do you want to leave us?
Well, I want to leave you on a positive note because we've got some serious issues, absolutely, that we need to face as a country. But I wanted to let everybody know that this is all fixable. And I do believe in America. I know from the research I've done, and it really heartened me to know that this country can go on for as long as we choose to let it go on. And together, we can make things better. This is all fixable. And the final chapter of my book is called The Path Forward. And I think it's very inspiring because it pulls from the past but also talks about the future. There's a lot of very bright and smart people in this country that know what needs to happen. And I think we just need to listen to them and listen to ourselves. The people need to take control of the government again, though. And we need to take the control of the government out of the hands of the professional politicians. And the people definitely need to rise up and reassert their power and take control of our government again and get this country back. It is our government, by the way, too. And get this country back on the right track. And then if we do that, and I know we will, it's just a question of how long it takes us and how much pain we go through before we get there. But we will do it. The country will be fine. But we just got to make it happen. So, and like I said, the details of this are in the last chapter of my book called The Path Forward. And I think together, I do agree with... You know, we don't bet against America. I think that we've gone through so many crises and so many problems that we will rise up again. However, it's only going to happen if we make it happen. So we have to come together and fix these issues that I discuss in my book.
So you've worked in many other countries and continents and traveled or lived in the majority of the United States. If you had a crystal ball based on what you know about the people today, what America has been through in the last, let's say 4 or 5 years, what direction do you think we're heading?
Well, right now, I think short term, we're in a lot of trouble, as we all know. And I wish I could say something different, but and, you know, my big concern is that we're really in this trade deficit that I just talked about for, you know, most of the show. Nobody's discussing it, and it's a huge issue, and it's bankrupting our country along with the national debt. Those are the, and I talk about this in detail in the book and explain why. Those are the two most pressing issues, and they're really related to each other. One's driving the other. Those both have to get tackled, like, right now. And we have to restructure our trade relationships around the world, and there's a bunch of other things we have to do that I discuss in my book and explain why. And so, but I think the next, yeah, the short-term future right now, what I see in the U.S., is not good. We're gonna go through a lot more pain, and honestly, I don't know how that's all gonna play out. But some people are predicting some pretty bad things on both sides of the political spectrum, and that's not being discussed in the campaigns, unfortunately. But you know, the problem I have with both of these campaigns right now is it's all form and no substance.
Yeah,
and,
that seems to be pretty typical.
Substance.
Yeah,
what's that?
That seems to be pretty typical in campaigns.
Yeah, what I want to encourage people to do too, though, is look at who your congressional representatives are.
Mm-hmm.
Americans, we spend way too much time focusing on the presidential elections,
right,
and not enough time really drilling down on the senatorial races in the House of Representatives. In my, you know, and as we can see from the approval rating in Congress right now, that's where the game is most important to be played. And that's where the way our government's structured, the Congress is the one supposed to be balancing the checkbook and running the majority of trade policy and other issues that I'm talking about in my book. So we really need to focus on putting good people in Congress that we know are going to be accountable to whatever district you're in, and they're going to represent the values of the people of that district.
And I do have to say that I think the Tea Party movement has been very instrumental in focusing individuals back into their local economies and their local politics.
Yeah.
I don't think that I've ever seen a movement that has been so grassroots and locally based as this one is.
That's good. And that's what needs to happen across this country. And people need to get engaged again. They need to get re-engaged and re-energized and do it, you know, what I'm hoping we can get to, and we're not there yet, but get back to a fact-based, and that's why I wrote this book, a fact-based, rational discussion on issues. And, you know, and get the emotions out of it as much as possible and really come together as Americans and say, you know, and I love Abraham Lincoln, one of his quotes. He said, the government should only do what people can't do for themselves. And
yeah.
So I think we need to come back to that and start there and say, okay. And the other thing, too, I talk about in my book is we need to get away from this discussion of big government, little government. And we need to talk about effective government, rational government, and agree, come to some consensus on what do we want state, federal, local government to do and not do. And then once we kind of come to a consensus on that, then figure out how are we going to pay for this. And I talk about tax code simplification and so forth. I talk about all these issues in my book. But I'll make one comment on the taxes. It's interesting. We got this whole debate about tax simplification. And I came across one report when I was researching my book, just to use this as an example. The tax code was actually worked fine once we got it. We tweaked it back in the late 30s through, I'd say, the 70s. It worked pretty well. And but what happened was, though, in the 60s is when the lobbyists got their hands in a big way, and they started mucking it up with all these additions and loopholes and such. And then it became, actually, I'd say in the 50s and 60s, we started, instead of using it just to collect revenues, we started using the tax code for social engineering and trying to incentivize people's behaviors. So what I recommend in my book, and this wasn't just my recommendation, but other people that are much more knowledgeable in the subject than I am, is we go back to the tax code of 1939 and just update and modify it. It was a 500-page document, and it was focused on revenue collection. It didn't try to socially engineer the country. And so these are the kinds of things. These are kind of pragmatic. What I stress in my books, we need to get back to American pragmatism, and we need to get back to what we know works, common sense, pragmatic discussion, and we need to move forward, and we need to realize that regardless of where your political views are, we're all in this together. It's our country, and we sink or swim together.
Well, that's certainly true. I really encourage people to find the book at your local bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever you shop for books. J.R. Martin, Selling Us Out. It's a great book. I mean, it's full of graphs and charts, You even go back as far as the 1800s and talk about inventions and their impact on the economy and America and how great we are. So, I mean, it's a fantastic book.
And what, you know, I know at the beginning we talked about how, you know, you kind of discovered this while you were, you know, in your line of work. What is your line of work?
Oh, my line of work. I'm sorry. Yeah. So I spent 9 years in the Navy, and then after I came out of the Navy, I got my engineering degree and my business degree while I was in the Navy. That was in cryptology. And then so when I came out of the service, I went to work in the semiconductor industry.
Ah.
And I worked in that industry for a number of years, and then since then I moved over to the medical device industry. So but most of that time, some of it was in engineering, and then I moved into marketing and sales.
Oh, okay. So you're pretty well-rounded. That would give you a pretty good vision of capitalism and the economy and
yeah,
such.
Yeah, and medical device, I mean, that's everywhere.
Yep, yep. And I've been most countries. I've been a lot of places. I've been to Israel several times. I love Israel. You talked about having somebody on the show from Israel. But so, yeah, I've been most countries in the world, most continents. I think I've been on 6 of the 7 continents. And and mostly doing business, but yeah, I feel like I have a pretty rounded view of things as far as seeing what works and what doesn't work here and also other places.
So if you were going to, you know, if it was yours to do, somebody, you know, the government, you know, them, they were listening
yeah.
in and they said, okay, you pick the country we work with first. Who would you fix this with first? Who do you think is the most easy to work with?
Well, the biggest offender is China, and I think I would take a very aggressive stand with China because they still need access to our markets to keep their economy growing. And I would leverage them. You know, the Asian, I've done business in Asia for years, and you have to do it privately so you don't embarrass them, but you got to play with a firm hand with these guys. You can't pussyfoot around with them, otherwise they're gonna push you all over.
Sure.
So you've got to be very firm and very direct, and I think I would get the relationship with China under control first. And secondly, I think the country that I think we could have the most, and China, I don't think, honestly, we can have a positive relationship with that country until they get rid of their communist system. I mean, most Americans have forgotten that we're dealing with a communist country here that denies basic freedoms and rights to their own people. So I think we can have a good business relationship with them, but it has to be one that we restructure and make sure it's mutually beneficial. And we have to be firm in our stance in making sure that we do that. And the same with Japan. We have to be much firmer with how we deal with Japan and stop playing cat and mouse games with them like we've been doing for 50 years. And I talk about that in my book. The country that I think we have the biggest opportunity to develop a mutually beneficial and positive trading relationship with is India. And I think that culture and them being the world's largest democracy, I think that if we structure things properly between them and us, I think that could be a hugely positive relationship for the United States and for India. And so that's the country I would probably focus on first and foremost, because I think we line up the best with them, both politically and culturally.
Okay.
And I think that could be a very positive relationship if we structure it properly.
Great, thank you. So we'll
be listening for that to be happening, because we know that the government listens to our show.
We're wrapping up with J.R. Martin, author of Selling Us Out. Go to sellingusout.org or We the People Radio. Radio.us. Find out more about the author and buy the book.
Thank you, JR.
All right, thanks for having me on your show.
Hey, guys, we have a 5-minute news break. We're going to come back with James O'Keefe of Acorn fame. And we're really going to have him on today, for real. See you in 5 minutes.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.